News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. Hey, good afternoon. I'm Steve Evans. I'm sitting in the studio with Mike Lee, our senator for Utah. With 1 week before the general election, Utah Senator Mike Lee is in the Uinta Basin today, reaching out to citizens here in northeastern Utah. Now, from issues related to the Uinta Railway to public land access to domestic energy production, Senator Lee has consistently answered the call to support the Uinta Basin on federal legislation and overregulation that's affecting our region. I want to make it known that Evans Family Media has reached out to the McMullen campaign, asking him to go on the record and address issues that would compromise our quality of life in the Uinta Basin. And his campaign declined our request. Welcome to the studio, Mike.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Thank you. And I appreciate, Leslie, you were going to be speaking in Duchesne at 3 o'clock today at the Centennial Event Center, and you just completed a standing ovation at an audience with the Vernal Area Chamber of Commerce. So we appreciate your attention to the Uinta Basin. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you. And it's fun to be able to do your show from the studio rather than
on the phone in Washington. What is the number one issue, as you've been on the campaign trail throughout Utah, what is the number one issue facing that you're asked about that's facing Utah citizens?
The number one issue I hear about from one end of the state to the other is inflation. And the number two issue I hear about is inflation, and so is the third. I mean, it encompasses everything. I've never seen one issue occupy so much of the bandwidth, and with good reason. The average Utah family, the average Utah household has to shell out an additional $949 a month, every month, just for their basic monthly necessities relative to the day Joe Biden took office. This is because we've got a federal government that's out of control, that's spending too much money. We took in $4 trillion last year. We spent nearly $7 trillion. When you just print $3 trillion out of thin air, it causes inflation. It's predictable. It's foreseeable. It was, in fact, foreseen and warned of by me and others here. President Biden proceeded with it, and the American people are paying the price. Nowhere is that price higher than it is right here in Utah.
Would that have happened had we had a conservative Congress?
No, absolutely not. Now, I'll be the first to admit that Republicans haven't been as fiscally prudent as I would like. We were running trillion-dollar deficits even when Republicans were in charge. That was to our great shame. But there's a big difference between that and what's been going on since Joe Biden took office and he's had this rubber-stamped Democratic Congress. They've been spending like drunken sailors, and Utahns are paying the price.
If we were to regain control of Congress, conservatives, do you think we can turn this ship around? And what would you do if reelected to address this issue?
There's a lot we could do with Republicans' majorities in the House and in the Senate. Couldn't undo everything when we still don't have control of the White House, but we could at least stop the flow of reckless spending. The $4 trillion in partisan-driven, reckless deficit spending has been brought about over the first year and a half of Joe Biden's term in office. We could at least stem the tide of that. We could also bring some accountability in the form of congressional oversight. We could force through some changes that would require streamlined permitting and hopefully some regulatory reform, and get answers to questions about things like the humanitarian crisis unfolding along America's border, answers to questions about Tony Fauci's lies to the American people, answers to questions about the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan. All those things would be on the table, along with more pro-energy policies that we could move towards. Again, with some limitations, given who our current president is, but there's a lot we could force through.
Overregulation, how has that affected domestic energy production?
Okay, overregulation affects everything, almost every aspect of business in America. Almost every aspect of our human existence is affected by federal regulations. People don't realize it, but between $2 and $3 trillion of regulatory compliance costs with federal regulations alone. These are the federal laws put in place not by elected lawmakers, but unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats. That's how much the American people shell out every year, just in higher prices on goods and services, diminished wages, unemployment, and underemployment from federal regulations alone. It means you work weeks out of months, weeks, if not months, out of every year just to pay your federal taxes, only to be told you're $31 trillion in debt. But there's this hidden tax. It's not really a tax, but it's an added cost associated with government that's almost comparable to that. That needs to be reformed. The best way to do that is to pass the RAINS Act, which would require Congress to approve laws made by unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats.
Is the RAINS Act something that you're sponsoring?
The RAINS Act is something that's introduced in the Senate by my colleague Rand Paul. I've introduced variations of it in different pieces of legislation. The original RAINS Act is introduced by Rand Paul.
Okay. All right. Future of domestic energy production. What is the future of it, in your opinion, and how does Utah, and more specifically the Uinta Basin, fit into that future?
There's no country in the world that has been blessed with a greater, more diverse abundance of plentiful, accessible, reliable, and affordable sources of energy than North America. We should be producing it right here in the United States. There should be no need for us to be a net importer. In fact, we should be a substantial net exporter of it. Now, we achieved that during the previous administration. Those tides were reversed during the current administration. Day one, President Biden takes office. On that same day, he puts a moratorium on oil and gas leasing. He cancels the Keystone XL pipeline. He otherwise sends all kinds of messages that end up resulting in diminished American production, making us more reliable on OPEC and other oil and gas producing nations. This has empowered our enemies. This has resulted in violence in various parts of the world. It's emboldened Vladimir Putin in his acts of aggression against Ukraine. It's made the American people even poorer while they're already struggling under the yoke of Biden-caused inflation.
All right. I was at a campaign rally of yours in Draper the other day, and when you drive into the rally, there were a bunch of protesters, and they were calling you a Putin puppet.
Yeah. What? Very clever.
Address that.
Very clever. Yeah. This is science fiction fantasy, and I've never seen an opponent this nasty. I usually don't talk about my opponent. I talk about what I believe.
And it's been really nasty.
It has. I've never seen.
How do you support that? How do you deal with that? It has to bother you.
I continue to focus almost entirely on what I stand for. But since you've raised it, since you've asked about it, I'll tell you. I haven't seen a statewide or federal candidate in Utah this nasty ever, not in my lifetime, willing to resort to ad hominem attacks that are utterly baseless. Calling me a Putin puppet, suggesting I'm some sort of an operative for him or beholden to him or that I even like Putin. Vladimir Putin is a megalomaniacal dictator. He's an evil man. And I loathe everything he stands for. Now, what does my opponent call me this? Well, he fabricates this complete lie that I am somehow that he can just somehow justify that based on the fact that I voted against a couple of bills that he liked, bills that were laden with progressive nonsense. Perhaps that's why he likes them. One of which was a Russia sanctions bill in 2017 that was cobbled together with a bunch of liberal progressive priorities that I didn't like. And so I voted against it, not because I didn't want to sanction Russia so much as I disliked the other
like the
nonsense
pork involved
that was
in the bill.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then in 2019, I visited Russia at the invitation of our then U.S. ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman. Ambassador John Huntsman was my former boss. He's a dear friend of mine. He's a mentor of mine. He invited me over there to visit Russia while he was the ambassador, in part because we had missionaries, Latter-day Saint missionaries, who had been imprisoned by the Russian government. We've had religious freedom issues in Russia. I wanted to go over there to learn more about it and figure out how we could tell Russia to knock it off.
Did we get the missionaries out?
The missionaries got out.
Oh,
and yeah, to my knowledge, they're not currently imprisoning any missionaries. But that was the focus of my trip. He claims that I went over there and tried to help Putin to get out of U.S. sanctions. That's nonsense. I met with a member of the Russian Duma who asked, how can we get out of it? And I said, well, I'll answer it this way. Maybe if you'd stop being such jerks, there wouldn't be such antipathy toward you that results in these sanctions. If you want to get out from under them, you could start by not imprisoning American missionaries, by ceasing to oppress religious minorities and gays and lesbians. Stop doing that, and maybe you won't be the global pariah that you've become.
Moving on, because we've got just a short time, and I have a whole list of questions. In a recent television ad, again from your opponent, your opponent was claiming that you wish to phase out Social Security. Do you support the Social Security program?
Yeah.
And could you put that in context?
Look, in everything that I've ever said about Social Security, I've always started and ended with this. We've got to make sure that America's retirees are made whole, that people who have either reached retirement age or are even within 10 or 15 years of retirement age have no changes to the benefits that they've been promised because they've paid into this for decades. They have a legitimate reliance interest built into it. I have also said that to make sure that this program remains stable enough to provide that very promise, we've got to stop letting Congress raid it. And I've introduced a series of reforms to protect it. So, yeah, he's taking words wildly out of context in a way that are dishonest and that misrepresent what I've consistently stood for since I've been a U.S. senator.
All right. Your opponent has stated that he will not be caucusing with the Republican or the Democrat parties if elected. If that's the case, will he be able to serve on any committees and won't he be ineffective as a senator?
For the last 177 years, since 1845, senators have received their committee assignments through the caucuses, through one of the party-driven caucuses in the Senate. And so the Senate rules that talk about each member getting committee assignments are not self-enforcing. They're not self-executing. They're carried out according to this history and tradition that goes back 177 years. The last senator who tried to do what McMullen is pledging to do, which is to, as a senator, be completely independent of those caucuses, was a guy named Wayne Morse. He represented the state of Oregon in the U.S. Senate. It didn't work. Wayne Morse couldn't get committee assignments while he remained unaffiliated. He ended up caucusing with the Democrats, which is exactly what Evan McMullen will do. Now, make no mistake, this is a guy who voted for Joe Biden. He campaigned for Joe Biden. He encouraged other people to vote for Joe Biden. He's praised everything Joe Biden has done when he speaks about Joe Biden. He's condemned everything Republicans have done. He has now raised millions of dollars off the Democratic donor network known as Act Blue. He's spent that money through Democratic consultants who represent exclusively Democratic and progressive candidates. So look, if it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, if it has webbed feet like a duck, in this case, it is a Democrat, and that's what he is. That's what he will ultimately align as a senator. Now, if hypothetically he were able to somehow remain independent, he would be feckless because he couldn't get his committee assignments without doing
now,
that.
Didn't he vote for Biden? I've seen footage of him stating proudly
voted for
that
him,
he voted
campaigned for
him. And campaigned for him. And he also campaigned in a key Republican race. He campaigned against Republicans, as you had mentioned in the Chamber of Commerce meeting today, in a key race in 2021 in Georgia.
There was a rare circumstance in Georgia in which both Senate races were up at the same time because Kelly Loeffler was there filling the vacancy left by a former colleague, Johnny Isaacson. We had two of them up at the same time, and both of them resulted in a runoff because of a unique quirk of Georgia law. So they were both in a runoff in early January of 2021. At that time, the balance of the Senate was at stake. If we had held those seats, we would have kept the Republican majority. We would have avoided $4 trillion of reckless, partisan-driven inflationary spending under the rubber-stamped Democratic Congress of Joe Biden. Guess which side Evan McMullen weighed in on? He campaigned against Loeffler and Perdue, told people to vote Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue out of office. And here's what he said on this tweet on January 3rd, 2021. With few exceptions, the GOP has become a ruinous, unpatriotic blight, and both senators, Perdue and Loeffler, are as corrupt as they come. He, of course, offers no support for this. I know them well. Mm-hmm. They're not corrupt.
There hasn't been support of any of these claims.
And he finishes with, the Republic cannot sustain such depravity indefinitely. He's defaming them with reckless disregard for the truth. He campaigns for Ossoff. He campaigns for the two Democrats, Warnock and Ossoff. They win. So he single-handedly helps facilitate this Democratic majority that has brought us $4 trillion in reckless, out-of-control, inflationary, partisan deficit spending. This guy is no independent. He walks and quacks and looks and acts like a Democrat.
In a television campaign ad I saw yesterday, and I'll wrap this up, you were being criticized by a citizen opponent of yours that you, quote, haven't gotten anything done. What have you gotten done as senator, and what are you most proud of? There's no way that you can talk about everything that you've accomplished in the Senate, but what are you most proud of?
Okay, so first of all, as to what I'm most proud of, probably the First Step Act. This is the most serious, most aggressive, landmark criminal justice reform legislation, not just in decades, but in generations. Saw that there was a problem with federal sentencing, federal criminal laws, resulting in, we had a guy in Utah on federal charges who was sentenced to 55 years in prison for selling three dime bags of marijuana over a 72-hour period while carrying a gun, which was neither brandished nor discharged nor displayed in connection with the offense. All the result of minimum mandatory sentencing at the federal level. I teamed up with Dick Durbin, a liberal Democrat from Illinois, when I first got to the Senate. I convinced him that we needed to do something to fix this problem and that it was a monumental one. He and I both agreed to do it, and he said it's probably politically dangerous territory for both of us, but somebody got to do it. So we added people, mostly liberal Democrats. And at first, it was mostly me and a bunch of liberal Democrats pushing for this. Cory Booker from New Jersey, another liberal Democrat, joined with us. Rand Paul eventually joined us.
And Cory Booker were on the same same team there for
a while? First time I met him, the day he was sworn in as a senator, he sought me out. He said, I'm Cory Booker. I want in on your criminal justice reform effort. I was thrilled that anybody even knew about it.
Right.
It wasn't getting much attention yet. And so they said, you can never get it done because you can't get cloture. Getting cloture, bringing debate to a close, takes 60 votes. You'll never get enough Republicans. It was mostly me and later Rand Paul and a bunch of liberal Democrats. And I said, not only can I get that done, I think I can get to 65. At the end of 2018, I got 87 votes. Would have been 88, but Lindsey Graham went to Afghanistan at the last minute. It was a miracle, but it was a miracle performed by years of work, bipartisanship.
Of Evans Family Media, we'd like to thank you, Senator Lee, for coming to the Uinta Basin and showing an interest in our way of life here in northeastern Utah. Thanks for coming. This is News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL.